Penguin Random House Audio presents Unwinding Anxiety. New science shows how to break the cycles of worry and fear to heal your mind. This is the author, Judson Brewer, MD, PhD. Note to listeners, this program includes a downloadable PDF that contains the Behavioral Tendencies Questionnaire from the book. To Amazon Addict. Introduction. Anxiety is everywhere. It always has been. But in the last several years, it has come to dominate our lives in a way that it perhaps never has. My own history with anxiety goes back much further. I'm a doctor, a psychiatrist to be precise. Only after years of struggling to help my patients overcome their anxiety and continually feeling like I was missing something important in their treatment did I connect the dots between anxiety, my lab's neuroscience research on habit change, and my own panic attacks. And that's when everything changed. I had a light bulb moment when I realized that one of the reasons so many people fail to see that they have anxiety is the way it hides in bad habits. Now, I think many more people are unavoidably aware of their anxiety, whether or not they are trying to conquer a habit. I never planned to be a psychiatrist. In fact, I had no idea what type of doctor I wanted to be when I started medical school. I just knew that I wanted to bring together my love of science with my desire to help people. Combined MD-PhD programs are set up so that you spend the first couple of years in medical school learning all the facts and concepts. After that, you switch to your PhD years, focusing on a specific scientific field and learning how to do research. Then you go back to the wards and finish your third and fourth years of medical school before heading off to residency to specialize in a particular field of medicine. When I started medical school, I wasn't dead set on becoming a certain kind of doctor. I was simply fascinated by the complexity and beauty of human physiology and cognition and wanted to learn how this human system of ours worked. Typically, the first 2 years of medical school give medical students the time and space to start leaning toward a field they might want to specialize in. Then they confirm this decision during their hospital ward rotations in the third and fourth years. It takes 8 or so years to complete a combined MD-PhD program, so I figured I had plenty of time to discover what called to me and just focused on learning everything I could. It took me 4 years to complete my PhD, which was just enough time for me to forget everything I had learned in my first 2 years of medical school. So when I finished my PhD and went back to pick up where I had left off in medical school, I chose psychiatry as my first ward rotation so I could relearn everything I had forgotten about how to interview patients while I was off in PhD land. I had never thought of becoming a psychiatrist, as they generally aren't portrayed positively in the movies. And in medical school, I had heard the joke that psychiatry is for the lazies and the crazies. That is to say, you become a psychiatrist if you yourself are lazy or crazy. But that psychiatry rotation opened my eyes to what I could later look back on and say was a confluence of serendipity and timing. What I learned was that I absolutely loved being on the wards and really connected to the struggles of my psychiatric patients. I could see myself being perfectly happy trying to help them understand their minds so they could more effectively work with their problems. While I loved most of my other ward rotations, nothing called to me quite as much as psychiatry. So that's the medical specialty that I chose. When I graduated from medical school and started my residency training at Yale, I found that not only was psychiatry a good fit for me, but I developed an even deeper connection to my patients who struggled with addictions. I had started meditating at the beginning of medical school and had continued doing so on a daily basis during my 8 years of MD-PhD training. As I learned more about my addicted patients' struggles, I realized that they were talking about the same types of struggles that I had learned about in my own meditation training, those connected feelings of craving, clinging, grasping. To my surprise, I found we shared a language and a struggle. Residency was also the period when I started having my own panic attacks, fueled by a lack of sleep and the feeling that I didn't know anything, combined with the uncertainty of being on call and never knowing when my beeper was going to go off in the middle of the night and what train wreck was going to be on the other end when I called the nursing station. All of this took a collective toll on my psyche. Talk about being able to empathize with my anxious patients. Fortunately, my meditation practice helped here as well. I was able to use my mindfulness skills to ride out full-blown panic attacks that would wake me from sleep. Better yet, and I didn't know why at the time, These skills helped me not to add fuel to that fire of panic. I learned to work with anxiety and panic so that I didn't worry or freak out about having more panic attacks, which kept anxiety at bay and kept me from developing a true panic disorder. I also started to learn that I could teach people to become aware of uncomfortable feelings rather than habitually avoiding them. I could give them a way to handle and work with their emotions that wasn't simply prescribing them a pill. Toward the end of my residency, I realized that virtually nobody was researching the science of meditation. Here was what seemed like a hidden gem, something that had helped me with extreme anxiety and possibly could help my patients as well. And nobody was exploring why or how well it worked. So over the next decade, I threw myself into creating a program to help people overcome their harmful habits, which are strongly connected to and even driven by anxiety. In fact, anxiety is in and of itself a harmful habit. Now, it is an epidemic. This book is the result of all that research. In the movie The Martian, Matt Damon's character has an oh shit moment when he realizes that he's stranded on Mars. During a windstorm, all of his buddies hightail it back to the safety of their spaceship and leave him for dead. He sits down in his little Martian outpost wearing his cute little NASA hoodie and tries to cheer himself up with a rousing speech. In the face of overwhelming odds, I'm left with only one option. I'm going to have to science the shit out of this, says Matt. Taking up Matt Damon's inspiration, in this book, I have scienced the shit out of anxiety. There are loads of books out there about these topics, thick ones and thin ones, some with catchy titles, fantastic stories, and secret methods or hacks for success. But not all of them are, shall we say, overflowing with actual brain science. I can promise you there is plenty of science in this book, and it's actual science, based on studies my lab has done over many years and with real participants, first at Yale, now at Brown University. I've also published the papers that other people read and write books about, so we're covered there too. I've been doing research for decades, and I've loved learning and discovering new things. But I'd have to say, the single most interesting and important connection that I've made is the link between anxiety and habits, why we learn to get anxious, and how even that becomes a habit. Making that connection has answered the question of why we worry, which has satisfied some of my scientific curiosity about anxiety. But more important, it has been critical for helping my patients understand and work with their own anxiety. You see, anxiety hides in people's habits. It hides in their bodies as they learn to disconnect from these feelings through a myriad of different behaviors. Seeing this connection, I could now help my patients understand how they had formed habits around everything from drinking too much alcohol to stress eating to procrastinating as a way to deal with anxiety. I could also help them see why they were struggling so much and failing to overcome both anxiety and their other habits. Anxiety would feed the other behaviors, which would then perpetuate their anxiety until all would spiral out of control, landing them in my office. One of the main things I've learned is that in psychiatry, the maxim, the less you know, the more you say, is applicable. In other words, the less you understand about a topic or situation, the more you fill that void with words. More words don't equal a better interpretation or more insight for your patients. In fact, when you don't know what you're talking about, the more words you use, the greater the chances are that you will dig yourself into a hole. And when you find yourself in a hole, stop digging, right? It was a painful lesson to learn, but I realized that the less you know, the more you say applied to me as much as to anyone. Imagine that. I wasn't some exception to the rule, where I could go on spouting nonsense as if the more I talked, the more it helped my patients. If I did precisely the opposite, that is, I kept my mouth shut, tried out some of that Zen don't know mind, and waited until I saw some clear connection instead of trying to sound like a psychiatrist, I could actually really help people. The less is more adage applies to domains outside of psychiatry as well, like science. As I spoke less and listened more, I realized that the concepts I was developing concerning habit change kept boiling down and down, simplifying themselves as they went. But as a scientist, I had to be careful not to believe my own hype. The concepts were simple, but did they actually work? And could they work in settings beyond my outpatient clinic? So back in 2011, when my first big clinical trial for smoking cessation showed a whopping 5 times greater quit rate for my program than the gold standard treatment, I started exploring how we could use those weapons.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?